Chapter 2. Running with the Blue Bloods. Our first official act as dog owners was to have a fight. It began on the drive home from the breeders and continued in fits and snippets through the next week. We could not agree on what to name our clearance dog. Jenny shot down my suggestions and I shot down hers. The battle culminated one morning before we left for work. "Chelsea," I said, "that is such a chick name. No boy dog would be caught dead with the name Chelsea. Hunter. Hunter is perfect." "You're kidding, right? What are you, on some macho sportsman trip? Way too masculine. Besides, you've never hunted a day in your life. What's wrong with Louie?" "Nothing if you're a gas station attendant. Hey, watch it. That's my grandfather's name." As we fought, Jenny absently walked to the stereo and pushed the play button on the tape deck. It was one of her marital combat strategies. The lilting reggae strains of Bob Marley began to pulse through the speakers, having an almost instant mellowing effect on us both. We had only discovered the late Jamaican singer when we moved to South Florida from Michigan. In the white bread backwaters of the upper Midwest, we'd been fed a steady diet of Bob Seger and John Cougar Mellencamp. But here in the pulsing ethnic stew that was South Florida, Bob Marley's music, even a decade after his death, was everywhere. We heard it as we sipped Cafes Cubanos in Little Havana and ate Jamaican jerk chicken in little holes in the wall in the dreary immigrant neighborhoods west of Fort Lauderdale. We fell in love with his music for what it was, but also for what it defined, which was that moment in our lives when we ceased being two and became one. Bob Marley was the soundtrack for our new life together in this strange, exotic, rough-and-tumble place. And now, through the speakers, Marley's voice filled the room, repeating the chorus over and over, "Is this love that I'm feeling?" And at the exact same moment, in perfect unison, as if we had rehearsed it for weeks, we both shouted, "Marley!" I tried it on for size. "Marley, come! Marley, stay! Good boy, Marley!" "Hey, I think it works," I said. Jenny did too. Our fight was over. We had our new puppy's name. The next night after dinner, I came into the bedroom where Jenny was reading and said, "I think we need to spice the name up a little." I had been reading the registration papers from the American Kennel Club. As a purebred Labrador retriever with both parents properly registered, Marley was entitled to AKC registration as well. This was only really needed if you planned to show or breed your dog, in which case there was no more important piece of paper. For a house pet, however, it was superfluous. But I had big plans for our Marley. This dog was the closest to blue blood I would ever get, and I wasn't about to pass up whatever opportunities it offered. "Let's say we want to enter him in competition. Have you ever seen a champion dog with just one name? They always have big long titles, like Sir Dartworth of Cheltenham." "And his master, Sir Dorkshire of West Palm Beach," Jenny said, and went back to her reading. The next morning, after a late night of brainstorming, I cornered her at the bathroom sink. "I came up with the perfect name." She looked at me skeptically. "Hit me." "Grogan's Majestic Marley of Churchill." "Man," I thought, "does that sound regal?" "Man," Jenny said, "does that sound dumb?" I didn't care. I was the one handling the paperwork, and I had already written in the name, in ink. When Grogan's Majestic Marley of Churchill took top honors at the Westminster Kennel Club dog show in a few years, and I gloriously trotted him around the ring before an adoring international television audience, we'd see who would be laughing.